Part 6. The Legacy. It was the telephone call every parent fears the most. The kind of call the mind conjures up in a nightmare that wakes you in the middle of the night in cold sweats, horrified. A mother, who had spent most of her adult life caring for her son, hesitantly put the receiver to her ear and was told, "Come quick, your son's lying unconscious in the street." Panicking, she rushed to the scene in the Aberdeen suburb of Bridge of Don in a desperate attempt to save his life. Those who had been socialising with Caroline Butler's 28-year-old son Kevin that night claimed he had suffered an asthma attack, but her mother's intuition told her his collapse was caused by something far more sinister. When she arrived at the scene, Caroline, now a retired NHS Grampian nurse, gave her son CPR, but her efforts were in vain, and he died in her arms on White Stripes Avenue. That Kevin was to lose his life in 2001 was tragic enough, but what made it all the more difficult to take was that he'd been clean for months, the first time he'd kicked heroin since he was 16. Caroline, who now stays in Kitty Brewster, said, "That was the worst part of it, but I'm convinced he took that dose of heroin intending to take his own life, despite all the things he'd accomplished for himself in the months beforehand and the hurdles he'd overcome. He didn't see a future for himself. He thought it was his time." Caroline said heroin was a hidden beast in Aberdeen in the late 1980s and early 1990s. She said, "It wasn't something people talked about, and it certainly wasn't something you could go to a friend or relative and ask for help about if you were affected. Someone I knew told me about a parent support group that had started to meet in the Clark Seat building at Royal Cornhill Hospital. I went along and walked in to see there were more than 100 people there, each with their own struggle. That was a clear sign that the problem was huge. It sounds strange saying this now, but attending that meeting gave me a good feeling because I no longer felt alone in facing this horrible problem. I felt as though I'd failed at being a parent, and suddenly here were all these other parents going through the same thing. It really helped. I said at that meeting that something had to be done to stop the issue of hard drugs getting out of hand. One of the doctors said at the time it was just a phase." Figures from the National Records of Scotland show 306 people died in Scotland due to drugs in 1980. In 1999, the figure was 492. The body only started compiling regional statistics in 1996, when 29 people died due to drugs in the Grampian area. The figure had risen to 38 by 1999, and 25 of those deaths in that year were due to heroin. It meant that heroin was killing someone in the region every 15 days in the last year of the 20th century. Each of those who lost their lives and the devastated families they left behind would have their own stories to tell about what led to their individual tragedies. Kevin's own story began with a firebomb. As a child, attending Kitty Brewster Primary School, he was a bright and breezy boy, always smiling and tearing around, forever active and a bundle of energy. Caroline said he was a fantastic football player. He loved football, and so did his dad, but Kevin kept bad company as he got a bit older. He fell in with a bad crowd. Age 14 and a student at Powis Academy, Kevin's classmates were stirring up trouble with youngsters from a rival school, and as time went by, things got out of hand. One night, the feud boiled over. A pitched battle broke out on a secluded field. Caroline said, "School was very different then compared to what it is like today, and sadly, things like this would happen. On this particular day, two schools got together and had a fight. Kevin was involved in that. It got to the point where firebombs were thrown. The police were involved and the school felt as though they needed to take action. I was interviewed by a lady from social work and it was decided that Kevin be put in an assessment centre. That effectively meant he was excluded from school. I was absolutely devastated. It seemed unfair to me. Kevin had been involved, but so had lots of others, and they were making an example out of one person." Caroline, who was 41 at the time, added, "I was a young woman myself and was brought up to respect authority. This was the first time I've ever known someone close to me getting into trouble." Kevin went into several assessment centres, all residential. It was an experience Caroline described as horrendous. She said, I saw them as often as I could, but they didn't make me feel welcome. At one point, one of the members of staff told me it would be better if I didn't visit often. I was appalled. I'm not sure why that was. I can only imagine it was because some of the children in there sadly did not have parents actively involved in their lives, and so they were maybe worried about them feeling left out if they saw me with Kevin. Caroline says she believes Kevin's actions in later life were partly down to the childhood trauma he experienced in those assessment centres. When he turned 16 in 1989, he left one of the centres and returned to the family home. But a chance discovery would change Caroline's life forever. Caroline said, "I was in his room and discovered a plastic bottle and a heap of tin foil. I couldn't think what it was. People just didn't know anything about hard drugs back then. One of my friends was a police officer's wife and I asked her if she knew what it was used for. I was shocked when I found out it was for heroin. Kevin came out of the assessment centres with absolutely no skills whatsoever. He was a damaged individual. You could see that in his demeanour." Referring to her husband, Kenneth, who passed away in 2011, Caroline added, "Kenneth tried to get him a job at a printing firm and then at a carpentry company, but nothing stuck. He didn't have the work ethos that most people have. There was nothing saying in his head, I just want to get up, go out and make something of myself. At the same time, I wouldn't give him any money, just so he could put a needle in his arm." Without any income, Kevin turned to crime to fund his habit, breaking into houses and stealing from shops throughout the last of his childhood years. Caroline would often get visits from police officers after her son was caught breaking into houses. She said, I never allowed him to keep his drugs in the house, and he would just be out stealing to feed his habit. Police were constantly at the door. It frightened me to death, the thought he was breaking into people's homes and taking their belongings. People often think that drug users come from deprived backgrounds, but it wasn't like that with Kevin. Our household went from a situation where having run-ins with the authority was unheard of, to the police being around all the time. Having something like this in the family was an alien concept. Caroline recalled the heartbreaking day police arrived at her Bridge of Dawn home with a search warrant. She said, they were searching the house from top to bottom. I told them, you won't find any drugs. Having them rifle through our things was quite humiliating. But I understand they have a job to do. It reached a point where my life revolved around Kevin. I would go to work as a nurse, finish my shift, come home and wonder at what point the police would come knocking. The procurator fiscal arranged for Kevin to see a psychologist about his pattern of offending. And Caroline alleged the professional accused her of burying her head in the sand about his problems. She said, I felt everything was being taken out of my hands. Here was a boy who became a young man who was driven just by his need for heroin. How is it going to stop that? You can't lock someone in the house round the clock. Kevin's offending eventually caught up with him, and he was sentenced to 2 years at Polmont Young Offenders Institution, a former borstal dating back to 1911. Now designed to hold 760 inmates between 16 and 21. Caroline would drive a 270-mile round trip every few days to visit her son and recalled an atmosphere of tension. She remembered, they're supposed to help rehabilitate offenders, but it never felt like that happened. The place had a particular atmosphere about it. There wasn't much incentive for prisoners to engage with any help because drugs were being smuggled in for them. I remember one day going in to see him, with a huge slice across his face. Somebody'd attacked him with a weapon, and you could see it had injured him badly. Seeing that was so hurtful for me, seeing that he'd been hurt like that. He would never say what happened or what it was all about, but I got the impression it was to do with taking somebody's drugs and not being able to pay. Another custodial sentence was to follow, this time at Perth Prison, a 630 prisoner adult jail, which once boasted its own execution shed that was demolished, having never been used due to the abolition of the Murder Act by then the Home Secretary, Henry Brooke, in 1964. Kevin had been convicted of a series of housebreakings in the city, trying to raise the cash for his daily heroin fix. He told the police about a spate of crimes and was locked up for 18 months. Caroline said, his offending got worse when he came out of Perth Prison. I would say part of it is down to not coming off drugs while in prison, and part of it meeting new people and learning new tricks of how to offend. He became more bold, which is exactly the opposite of what you want as a mother, when you desperately want your son to get better. There was a change in his criminality. He would say to me he felt so worthless in himself, and all he wanted to do was escape his mind. One of Kevin's most serious crimes came in 1994, when he went into a corner shop in Aberdeen's Urquhart Road, armed with a knife. During a struggle, the then 22-year-old held the blade to the cashier's face, an offence that led to him being jailed for 6 years at Shotts Prison in Lanarkshire, scene of mass rioting involving 100 prisoners just a year earlier. The shop robbery still plays on Caroline's mind to this day. She said, "Kevin as a boy was a fantastic lad, even through the worst of his offending. I don't believe he was a nasty person. He cried on my shoulder and said sorry for putting that lady through that awful experience. I would have liked to have said to her at the court case, 'I'm truly sorry for what happened to you. It was an awful life-changing ordeal and it was wrong.' But I didn't think it was appropriate to approach her. When you lose a person to heroin, they become an entirely different person. Kevin used to say to me, 'I will never see 30, Mum. This is no life. This is an existence.' Then, everything changed. Entering his late 20s, Kevin resolved to turn his life around and got himself off heroin while approaching the end of his sentence in Shotts, where he served all of his 6-year term. Upon leaving custody, he enrolled on a methadone program, using a controlled heroin substitute aimed at helping users regulate and kick their habit. It worked. Caroline said, "Kevin was like a new person when he came out of prison that time. It was evident that his whole demeanour had changed. He was confident, having conversation. Kevin would ask, 'How's everyone in the family? How's Grandad and Grandma?' It was good to see him like that. Heroin makes you incredibly self-centred because all you care about is that next hit. But here was Kevin taking an active interest in his loved ones for perhaps the first time since he was 15. I'll never forget, he asked me, 'Will you come to see the GP with me?' He seemed to have a goal in mind and wanted to make positive moves. He was put on a methadone script. A lot of people who move onto it never go off, but he came off it completely. I can't tell you how proud I was." As the world moved into the new century, the Butler family was looking forward to a brighter future. One of Caroline's fondest memories from that time was taking Kevin to visit her sister in Essex, southern England. She said, "We had an absolutely wonderful time. I saw a side of Kevin I hadn't seen since he was in school. My two nephews took him to an Arsenal game. He loved it. I was proud of him because he didn't try to hide his past. He was still on methadone at the time and would talk openly to people about it. He never shied away from it." Upon leaving custody, Kevin began to get intimate with a woman he had met through a mutual friend. He would divide his time between the Bridge of Dawn family home and his partner's home, a 5-minute drive away. Caroline said, "She had a son. Kevin thought that little boy was a bee's knees. He became the caring person that he would have been had he never got involved with hard drugs. He was so thoughtful towards his girlfriend and would always talk about her in a compassionate way. He knew she smoked heroin. One night he said to me, 'Do you mind if I go and see her and spend the night?' I thought at the time there's no harm in it because he'd be okay at her house, especially with her son around." Caroline's trust was tragically misplaced. Rather than heading southwest across the River Don towards the Hilton area of Aberdeen to the home of Kevin's partner, the couple stayed within Bridge of Don and visited a couple at a house near the Asda supermarket. Kevin, his partner and the couple socialised that night, until Kevin's partner made that phone call that every loved one fears. Caroline said, "She sounded frantic. She told me Kevin had fallen unwell and collapsed and was lying in the street. I was worried out of my skin. By the time I got there, his partner was sat next to Kevin's body. They hadn't phoned for an ambulance. She kept saying, 'I'm sorry, I'm sorry.' They didn't have naloxone, a chemical used to revive people who've overdosed. So all I could do was give him CPR. I carried on and on, but I knew my son was dead. The couple's story was that he'd had an asthma attack. What I know from that night is that Kevin went up to a bedroom and shot up with heroin. My view is that Kevin did it deliberately. He'd been clean for 6 months and would have known that going back to his regular dose after a long break would have overwhelmed his system. I believe he wanted to die. I don't think he could cope with the world outside. This is what addiction is all about." Devastated by the loss of her son, Caroline wanted something positive to emerge from her trauma and so she volunteered with community organisation Substance Bereavement Support Aberdeen Group. Caroline said, "It was a lady called Wilma Falconer who started the group. Wilma has sadly passed away now. She was a brilliant lady, full of passion and empathy. It was really heartwarming to sit down and for someone to say, 'I know what it's like, I know what you've been through.' It gives you a well-supported feeling. It helped me considerably come to terms with what has happened to Kevin." Over the last 19 years, she's worked alongside other support groups, such as Aberdeen-based Alcohol and Drugs Action and Scottish Families Affected by Alcohol and Drugs, has been a source of support and comfort for recovering addicts and their families. She's also campaigned for a change in the law. Caroline said, "Childhood trauma and early life experience is often the reason why people turn to drugs. I do not believe they should be treated as criminals. They should be supported, and we need to look at the root causes." She has backed a campaign to decriminalise drugs possession and said she would welcome government-run injecting rooms in the Northeast with open arms, as they would become a safe haven for those affected by addiction. Caroline said, "The question is not why the addiction, but why the pain. I truly believe the stigma and reluctance to look at Kevin as a human being who is worthy of being helped was a barrier to his recovery. We've lost too many sons, daughters, and other family members. And I, for one, will always be advocating better facilities for those affected."